discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
Well, all across America this weekend, the premiere of a brand new movie that begins in a place of profound pain and difficulty and ends in a place of almost unimaginable joy, redemption, and hope. The movie is called I Can Only Imagine, the life story of Mercy Me lead singer, Mr. Bart Millard. The man himself joins us today in a very special conversation on the road for Faith Radio. And he explores his personal story and takes us inside the, as he calls it, surreal experience of having your life play out in front of you on the big screen. We begin our conversation with Bart with a well-deserved congratulations to him for his involvement in what is a tremendous motion picture. I Can Only Imagine.
Wow. Thank you so much. It was a kind of a nerve-wracking process just trying to no disrespect to other movies. I was really worried. I didn't want it to be like low-hanging fruit and kind of just you know what I mean? Like just kind of a fluffy Christian film, if you will. And they did a great job. I was like, man, if we're going to get this right, you know, they have to see how bad my dad was to appreciate the redemption story. And I think they, somehow pulling it off and not going rated R, they did a great job of walking that line and being true to the story. I really loved how it turned out.
Well, that's awesome to hear. And yeah, I totally understand what you mean by low-hanging fruit. And there are specific places in the movie where you think you know what's going to happen next, and the exact opposite happens. I want to ask you about that more in just a second. But I mean, my word, how much of an out-of-body experience is it to watch the story of your life play out on a big theater screen?
It's pretty surreal. I mean, let's just say it took me a few times to get to where I kind of separate myself from it emotionally. The first time I read the script was like, it was hard. I mean, and I guess that's giving him credit for getting close to, I mean, like it started stirring emotions that I've tried to avoid for a long time. And so I knew we were onto something. I just didn't realize until I got in the middle of it, how difficult it was going to be. I've probably seen the movie 20 times and it was intentional just to get to where before the premiere and before it comes out that I'm able to, I'm sure I have to watch it a few more times, but just get to where it's like, yeah, I'm watching actors portray this now. I don't feel like I'm reliving it anymore. But it took a while.
So fascinating. Well, there's some outstanding performances. I mean, Brody Rose and J. Michael Finley play you as you grow. Madeline Carroll, Dennis Quaid, just tremendous alongside. Did the actors kind of lean on you in a way to sort of help understand who they are depicting in this story?
I think as much as they could, I was there. I came in to watch them on set when Dennis Quaid started, which was about, they didn't have my dad cast until about halfway through filming. They kept pushing those scenes to the back.
Really?
They're trying to find the right person. And so I was there for the back half of the filming process. And I'd already, J. Michael that plays me is the older Bart. I'd already had spent a lot of time with him, and he was Jean Valjean in Les Mis on Broadway when we found him or when he auditioned for the part. And so went up to New York to see him perform that. And I was like, this dude's a little overqualified. We have to have him dumb it way down to sing our stuff. But they wanted somebody that could sing all the parts, and we just hit it off. And he spent a lot of time with me. He came to shows that we did just to watch mannerisms, stuff like that. And then Brody, the young Bart, I didn't get to meet him until I got on set, and he already had it locked in, man. He's a way cooler kid than I was in real life.
So if you're listening and wondering, okay, so what is, I know the music of Mercy Me, but what's the story here? Well, this movie really follows you from childhood all the way to the crafting of your hit song, I Can Only Imagine. And the depiction of your childhood, as you've already alluded to, really sets the whole story up. Can you share a bit about how those youthful years really shaped you.
Yeah, I mean, my parents divorced. I was three, and my mom remarried. I was in third grade, and moved to San Antonio, Texas, and all the adults in the process thought it was best for me and my brother to stay in the same small town with all of our family. All of our family was in a couple of minutes of each other. And so I lived with my dad from that point on, and no one really understood how abusive he was. My dad had a really bad temper, but never laid a finger on me until my mom left. And so I don't even think she realized that she was putting me in. Like, they had a lot of fighting match and they argue, but he never touched any of us. And somehow she thought that I was going to be okay. And so, it's like I spent, you know, up until he was diagnosed with cancer and when I was in high school, that was when the abuse kind of slowed down. But I started seeing him fall in love with Jesus and being transformed by the gospel. And during that time, probably about a 4 or 5 year period that he had cancer, he completely transformed into my best friend, the godliest man I ever knew. And so much so that it's the reason that I'm in ministry today is because I never thought the gospel would change a man like that. And when it did, it affects you for the rest of your life. And so the song was written after he passed away. Leaving the gravesite, my grandmother was like, I can only imagine what your dad's seeing now. And I became obsessed with it and would write it down anything I could get my hands on. If I was on the phone on hold, I'd be doodling it. My grandmother always thought I was practicing my autograph, but I'd just be writing I can imagine over and over. And then in Mercy Me, we were one song short on an independent record, and I was looking for a blank page to write a song, and literally every page in all my journals had I can only imagine written in it. And I was like, okay, I get it, God, and wrote it and kind of been hanging on for the ride ever since.
It's amazing. It's the voice of Mr. Bart Millard, the lead singer of the beloved band Mercy Me, the inspiration behind the new film, I Can Only Imagine, just out in theaters across America by the time you hear this. And you can find a theater at IcanOnlyImagine.com. There were some things that really stuck out to me just watching the film. And again, I mean, it's just a beautifully told story. I mean, a story is so powerful. And when the cinematography is this good, when the writing is this good, the acting performances are just sublime. So it's a great, great film. But we fast forward in the story to high school, right? And you're not involved in music. You're an athlete. You have this injury, and then you encounter this accidental starring turn in the musical Oklahoma. Did this play out in real life as it's depicted in the film?
Yeah, pretty much. I was injured. I went through a growth spurt and moved from the offensive line to tight end. And I was so excited that I would actually get to run with the ball or catch the ball. And the first practice scrimmage that I got to play that position, I had two linebackers hit head to head with my ankles in between them. Oh. I jumped for a high pass and broke my ankles. And I had to quit football. And choir was literally the only class available because school year had already started. So I got in choir and I don't even think I hit puberty yet, so my voice was kind of high. So it was kind of embarrassing to be a football player with a high voice. So I just didn't sing much. And then I used to go into, an empty auditorium or a church sanctuary or wherever I could just to avoid going home. And I would sing in these big rooms that were empty because I loved the way it sounded with nobody watching. And it was just something I always did. And my teacher heard me doing it, and she was like, well, you have a really great voice. And I was like, no, you weren't supposed to hear that. And next thing you know, she's casted me as the lead in Oklahoma. And so I had to play Curly against my will, but loved it. I mean, it was all the credit goes to an amazing teacher that pulled it out of me. Otherwise, I'd probably still not be singing.
Wow. That's amazing. The way that the film depicts this as well, you joining with the gentleman that became Mercy Me, you're depicted as right. A sound tech at a show. The band doesn't have a singer that night, and you go ahead and earnestly volunteer and say, hey, I can sing. Is that legit as well?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a hybrid of two stories, because what actually happened was I moved to Florida from Texas when my dad passed away to work at a church, and we had a praise and worship. There was a praise and worship band. That was the first kind of live band that I ever played with. and or worked with. And Mike, our guitar player, he was in that youth group in that band. Well, in the meantime, there's a ministry out of Oklahoma that was like traveling the country, you know, promoting teen missions overseas and stuff. So they did these little 2-day conferences. Well, my youth pastor in Florida was involved. He would fly out and help them on the weekends wherever they were. He was a dear friend of his. He got tired of doing it, so he sent me in his place because I was the little junior high youth intern guy. And so, so I got sent to these places, and it was another band, which Jim, our keyboard player, and a girl named Jamie Smith, who's a worship leader out of Oklahoma. That was a whole other band. And so when I'd go on the weekends, I was the guy that was like running tables, literally running the slide projector, and PowerPoint wasn't invented yet, and doing the words behind the scenes. So I was the tech guy. And so Jamie got sick and she couldn't make a show. And so they had this girl fill in who kind of panicked, like, I can't do it, and bailed. And so the band was like, we have no one to sing these songs. And I was like, hey, I've been running the slides every weekend. I know all the words. I can do it. And they were like, where'd you come from? And so I kind of jumped in and sang, and then that, me and Jim, and that kind of became the early version or the beginnings of Mercy Me. And I went back to Mike in Florida and said, hey man, you need to pray about, we need to do this. And so he was a freshman in college. He packed up in Florida. We moved to Oklahoma City where the ministry was kind of based out of. And so that's kind of where it came from. So they kind of mashed up the two things. I was in two different bands, but they love that story and kind of, but yeah, I was the guy that came out of nowhere. Was like, hey guys, I can sing it. I can do it. And they were like, wait, what? You're the tech guy.
it's an awesome moment to watch play out on the screen too. It's just a beautiful thing. So at the very beginning of the conversation, we were talking about these moments in the movie where you expect that something is going to just end beautifully and happily, and it doesn't. And the moment that really was that for me was this, your manager puts together this showcase opportunity where it's a big chance for you to perform in front of music labels. And you think what's going to happen, right, is you're going to sign there and go on to become Mercy Me. Well, instead, it takes a completely different direction. And there's this moment when one of the reps says to you, Bart, you're just not good enough. And how close did you come to quitting at those points in that early part of your career?
Well, in a way, we kind of did quit because, I mean, our dream and like playing it out in real life, we felt the same thing. We were going to get to that showcase and all of our dreams are going to come true. Like that's all we had worked for. And so we did it and we did a showcase and we had one album that we had made on our own. And so all we had was like 10 original songs. And so we got a bunch of youth groups and made them act like we were the Beatles, like actually, you know, baited the audience. Like, look, when we get out there, you got to go nuts. They're watching. And so we did our 10 songs. Well, they went so crazy. They wanted an encore. And we're like, y'all be quiet. We don't have any more songs. That's it. And they wouldn't quit cheering. And so we had to go back out and we did just cover worship songs we were doing for church camp over the summer. Like Lord, I Lift Your Name on High, Behold Lamb, and just normal cover stuff. And it ended up being this unbelievable moment to where, because these kids knew the songs inside and out, because we were leading worship for them on a weekly basis. We ended up leaving the stage, and they're still singing a cappella. Like, it was an amazing moment. Wow. And I remember the label execs afterwards going, hey, man, it was all okay, but the worship, man, I don't get it. Like, we can't sell that. That's what Integrity or somebody sells back in the day. Like, there was no Sonic Flood or anything like that yet. And he was like, we don't think we can do it. And I just remember being so offended and them saying, look, you know, you need to figure out who you are. And the movie was probably a little harsher as far as, you know, them saying go home and stuff, which is funny because I learned afterwards, didn't know it. But a lot of those conversations were also from the filmmakers, the Irwins, the things they heard as young filmmakers being told to go home, you can't do it. Hmm. And they had a harsher experience than I did. And so I love the fact that they took their own experience and kind of put it in that scene too. Because I first saw, I was like, man, that's brutal. No one would say that. And they're like, that's all they ever told us when we started. And I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. Wow. And so, but they did tell us to kind of, they kind of keep practicing, it's not going to, it's not now or whatever. But then that whole idea of me hearing my dad over and over, that was a very real thing for me. Like that's all. And I took it probably way harder than they meant for me to take it. Like they were polite and said, keep practicing. But all I heard was I was a failure. And so I think the scene is also kind of from my lens. And so we kind of called it quits the next morning, and we decided we were leaving, because we were living in Nashville at the time. We moved there for like 1 year to try to set up this showcase. And so we ended up moving to Dallas and doing what used to be called the Dawson McAllister Student Conference. We went there, and a guy named Mark Matlock had taken it over, and we just traveled and led worship for almost four years. And just gave up on the record deal. Like, that was, and so we kind of quit as far as that. We just laid our dream down and said, this is not what we're going to do. And it was during that season of walking away where Imagine was written, and we had no desire to sign a record deal at all. And even when they approached us, we're like, nah, we're good the way we are. And then got to a point to where, you know, we were, you know, the shows were awesome, but sitting in my garage trying to ship CDs to 400 bookstores was killing us. And so we needed help, and so we ended up signing. But yeah, it was definitely a huge defining moment of us kind of figuring out who we were as a band when they told us we weren't good enough.
Man. Well, Bard Millard, the lead singer of the beloved band Mercy Me, the inspiration behind the new film, I Can Only Imagine, just out in theaters as you hear this conversation all across America. ICanOnlyImagine.com for theater information. And sir, I know you have a full day of interviews ahead. I want to let you get back to that. But my word, what a pleasure talking to you, and just the very best to you with this film coming out, sir.
Man, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.